Welcome to the Keys of the Kingdom with Brother Gregory of His Holy Church.
Well, welcome to Keys of the Kingdom. I'm Brother Gregory, and we're going to talk about the Kingdom of God. And we just finished re-editing a book that we have available for free on the internet, along with lots of articles and audios. And it's Contracts, Covenants, and Constitutions. And it talks about, of course, the United States original Constitution, but it also talks about constitutions in the Bible and what the Constitution, what the concept of a Constitution is really all about. Covenants, social compacts, contracts, social compacts. And we talked in an earlier show about the golem of Jewish folklore, which was this clay monster, and it was actually symbolizing the idea of making a corporation, a contract. Contracts were made in clay tablets at one time. You etched in the clay tablet the terms of the contract. And this was done way back in Babylon and other points in history. You can actually find such tablets in burial sites in South Africa and South America and in China. And it was a way of men making a record. And of course, we have the idea of breaking a contract. The term has come all the way down to our times, breaking a contract. It had to do with breaking the clay contract, you know, actually shattering it, and the contract is done. And these contracts were kept in temples, because temples were the archive of society, where they made records, who was born when, and who was whose son, and who was to inherit his property. And all this was essential to societies, whether they were capitalistic or socialistic, because it was the job of everyone in society to attend to the weightier matters of law, judgment, mercy, and faith. If you go back to the very basics of society, even primitive society, certain areas were considered to belong to certain people, certain areas were considered to be sacred, certain areas were burial grounds, and they marked these things off in their minds. This was to be used for this, and this was to be used for that. If you were a cultivator of the ground, you might plant orchards and trim the trees of that orchard and cultivate the soil and add to the soil and pull the weeds. And all that was left of the place was a result of your labor. I mean, there was obviously something growing there before, but maybe in some cases, like out here in the desert, there's not much growing until you put water on it. So somebody has to organize the ditches and open the head gates and move the water about, or nothing will grow, or very little will grow, nothing that will actually sustain very much life. But when you add that water, that flow of water, and the flow of sweat and toil, then it becomes a garden. And that garden you have a right to. And that is proper. And it's what we call property rights. It's because you have cultivated it, you have formed it, you have dressed it, you have kept it. And therefore they say it's right that you decide who shall pick the fruit and who shall not pick the fruit. And who shall, you know, reap the rewards of your sweat. And of course, if you have a biblical spirit of God, you will share what you have. If you are selfish, you will miser away what you have created. And these are choices that you have been endowed with. You can make these choices. When you make those choices, you will pay the price of those choices. You will reap the benefits of those choices. And you will reap the curses of those choices. And this is what God has given us. We are endowed by our Creator with certain inalienable rights. The right to life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. And in other places, they talk about the right of property and the right of fraternity. And these are other rights. There's not a totally inclusive rights, but there are basic rights that man has. Now they talk about rights to income, rights to a minimal living that, you know, everybody should get enough money to live on as a bare minimum. You have a right to that. Well, no, you don't have a right to that, because to give you such a right would be to give you the sweat of another man's brow. And what gives you the right to take another man's sweat from him and distribute it according to your will? Who made you God? In reality, there is one God, and that God determines the success or the failure of the individual. He must do things according to the will of God to receive the blessings of God. So you have a right to expend the sweat of your brow. First off, when you were first born, you have no rights. Your parents have all the rights. They gave you life, just like God gave us all life. And your parents should raise you up in the ways of God, which means teach you about how to give life to others, because that's the nature of God, is to give life, to tend to the weightier matters of law, judgment, mercy, and faith. And you have no real rights except those rights and privileges that your parents give you. As long as you eat at my table, you will do as I say. And that's because it's your father's house. He gave you life, and you should obey your father. Now, there comes a time when your father is old and decrepit, and he may need help. And he will give his table to you. And you should take care of your father, honor your father, so that your own days will be long upon the land, so that your children will see your example. And I knew somebody once who was going to put their mother in a convalescent home, and the daughter complained. Why are you doing that? He says, well, it's so much trouble to take care of her and everything, and you know, she's such a handful. I don't know if I want her in our house all the time. And the daughter says, well, just give me the name of the place where you put her so I know where to put you when you're old. Well, guess what? Grandma didn't go to the home. Grandma stayed with them. And stayed under their care until she passed. And that's the way nature is. You know, what you sow, you reap. And so anyway, but it was proper that if somebody took land and made it flourish and made it grow and cultivated plants upon it, that they had an inherent right to those improvements over what nature had done. And of course, it was always a challenge to take, you know, start with property that isn't half bad to begin with. That's where property rights come from. And then you sweat, and when you die, you pass your property, your sweat, what you produced, on to your children. And it's called inheritance. In order to do that, to make sure that happens, you need records. And so societies have kept records. But they've also done something else where the society itself doesn't care as much for the liberty of the individual as it does for its own comfort. And so that spirit, when that enters into a society, they begin to make agreements, covenants, contracts, constitutions that says the state owns all the property, and you have it by the permission of the state. In reality, in a godly government, God owns all the property, and you individually are given dominion, and your dominion is recognized by your cultivation of dressing and keeping the property. You dress it, you keep it, you take care of it. It will be considered your, it's proper that you get the benefit of that property. And the state is simply created as a servant of the people, not to take away from the people. We actually saw today a little film that was done by Charlie Chaplin. And I think they call it the greatest speech ever given or something like this. And it was appears to be for some movie. There was English actors in it. And he gives this rousing speech. He's kind of dressed up like Adolf Hitler and has the little mustache. And he gives this rousing speech. Well, in the speech, much of it is very interesting, very well done, very, you know, very dramatically for a silent movie star. He did an excellent job. But he talks about making the world safe for democracy. Well, democracy makes the world safe for no one. Democracy is when 51% of the people can take away the rights of the other 49. A republic, a person is free from things public, and what he produces is his. There's property rights in a republic. State doesn't have any right to your property. Can't tax you on land you actually own. Can't tax you on your labor. Your labor belongs to you. But in order to have such a pure republic, you need to have people that care about their neighbor as much as themselves. If people don't do that, the republic will evolve into something else, like a social democracy or communist government or something. But in a nation of virtuous people, you have a right. You have a right to everything that you produce. Nothing you produce belongs to the state until you choose to give it to the state. And you, in a pure republic, you choose what minister you shall give your offering to, because you don't own all the land. All the improvements on the land are not yours. God makes it rain. God made the dirt. You know, there's an old joke about scientists thinking that, well, we can do everything. We can create life in the laboratory, and, you know, we can combine DNA, and we can genetically modify organisms, and we can do all this stuff. But no, they said, we don't need God anymore. So they were going to challenge God, and they were going to have God. They were both going to show what they could do in creating life. And so the God takes some dirt and he pulls it up and he molds it, and it turns into a little bird and flies away. And so the scientists run over there and they grab up some dirt and they start molding it together in their test tubes and everything. And God says, whoa, 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 wait a minute. What are you doing? He says, well, we're going to make something alive out of this dirt. And he says, well, okay, but get your own dirt, you know. So that's kind of where we're at. You know, the scientists really, they can't get their own dirt. God made the dirt too. So, you know, our feeble efforts are just going to mess up creation. Our genetically modified materials and organisms, I mean, they often use viruses to contaminate the genetic material in order to bring in, you know, genetic material from another species. The fact that they have taken genetic material from two different species doubles your disease gene pool. You're more likely to be susceptible to twice as many diseases. Because you took genetic material from this species, you got all their diseases that you may become subject to, and you took genetic material from this species. But then you used viruses. There's key markers in viruses. You use viruses to actually facilitate the combining of these two genetic materials. Opens you up for a whole, it just creates a freeway for viruses that were only appearing in one species to jump into another species and make everybody sick in that other species, because they would have no immunity to the disease that came from the original species, because they've never been exposed to that. So now they will. It's not only degrading your own immune system, it's giving an extra lever of support to the diseases that are coming from this other species. is the scariest thing for people like myself who've done a lot of study in biology and how plants work and how creation works. Genetically modified organisms is opening the door to some of the worst plagues in the history of mankind. Plus, most of the foods that they're producing are actually becoming toxic. And so, you know, I mean, it's something out of a science fiction book where, you know, if you eat the food that we are 100% dependent upon today, you're being poisoned. And it's going to get worse and worse and worse because they're often using the same viral bacterias, viral agents, to make these splices because they find better luck with these or those or whatever. And it's going to start connecting everything that they produce, and it's going to become exponential in the potential for additional diseases. We just finished a show on Ebola talking about, you know, how it's patented, and we were eventually getting around to the ultimate cure of Ebola. And if you want to know what that is, join the network. And Ebola is not the big fear anyway. I mean, it's a pretty devastating disease. It's kind of like, as I said in the program, it's like AIDS on steroids. It attacks the body in the same way that AIDS does. It's an autoimmune disease. But it does it, instead of 5 years, it takes like 5 days or 5 hours even. And you could be dying because it is extremely rapid in its processing. And there are diseases that could even be faster. So anyway, none of that is talked about. When we talk about in the book Contracts, Covenants, and Constitutions, we talk about roasting sacred cows, and of course we're talking about the Constitution of the United States, and I have quotes in there for like G.K. Chesterton where he says, "Truth is sacred, and if you tell the truth too often, nobody will believe it." And that's exactly what has come about, because we've got so many preconceived notions about what we think is true that if somebody contradicts it at all, we think, oh, that they must be wrong. And the reality is that, you know, like Mark Twain said, what gets us into trouble is not what we don't know. It's what we know for sure that just ain't so. And that's absolutely true in the case of the Constitution. The pure and simple truth is rarely pure and never simple. And yet I can simply say that the Constitution is a non-biblical document. It's anti-Bible. It's anti-biblical principles. It is contrary of the 5 items that you are supposed to have in any Constitution according to the Bible. Only one of them appears in the Constitution of the United States. Now, I think the world of the guys who wrote it, and I think that they would absolutely be surprised, or at least most of the guys who wrote it, I think they would absolutely be surprised at what they have created. But they have created an ultimate imperial golem that has gotten bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger and more powerful. Do I blame the golem? No, absolutely not. Do I blame the United States? Do I think the United States Corporation is a bad thing? No, absolutely not. It's absolutely what you deserve. And it's there to punish the wicked, just like Romans 13 says. And the wicked is the people who rejected the ways of God and went the ways of Caesar. And if you want to know what I mean by that, read the book. But the book opens up a lot of boxes and looks under a lot of stones and gives you a lot of facts, a lot of footnotes in the book. Luther Burbank once said, "It is well for people who think to change their minds occasionally in order to keep them clean. For those who do not think, it is best at least to rearrange their prejudices once in a while." Now, that's what it is that most of what people know or think they know, they are literally prejudices. They're what they imagine to be true. And they may not be true. They may be quite contrary to the truth. And to get them convinced that what they think is true is not true sometimes takes a lot of facts, because what they believe is true is the result of, you know, their prejudices, what they've already come to accept, and it's the result of facts and informations that were given to them that were either incorrect or incomplete. You remember that most lies are true, except they're not completely true. There's something missing. It's usually that what is left out that makes it a lie, not what is added in. It's what they don't tell. The best lies are lies because they leave out something, not because they're absolutely the reverse. It's because they leave out something that is essential. That's why they always talk about telling the whole truth, because without the whole truth, you're left with nothing but a lie. So in the book, we talk about religion is probably the single most abundant sources of sacred cows. It has been one of the most important and stabilizing influences on the order of mankind, individually and as a society. So religion has been that, but at the same time, religion has been the absolute disordering source of society. I mean, how many religious wars have there been fought? How many millions upon millions of people went to death because of disagreements between religious groups? So religion, if we're going to define religion as what we think about God, is one of the most devastating and demoralizing and destructive influences in society, in the history of society. But if we're going to think of religion as what we do to provide for our fellow man, the welfare of our fellow man, how we love our neighbor as ourselves, then religion takes on a completely different position in society and with completely different results. And you still have two different kinds of religion. You have the religions that provide the welfare of society by faith, hope, and charity, by free will offerings. And you have the religion that provides for the needs of society by force, by men who call themselves benefactors but exercise authority. These are the two types of welfare. And both of them can be defined as religion. And both of them actually may include what you think about God, but it won't be the God in heaven. It'll be about the gods of earth. Like, you'll think that they're not gods, but they are gods. They are ruling judges, and they tell you what to give and when to give and how much to give and when to stop giving and to who to give. And they are the systems of the world, what we see today, who exercise authority, because you don't have authority anymore. They have authority. They have taken your authority because you gave it to them, because you didn't want to tend to those weightier matters of law, judgment, mercy, and faith. John Cage said, "I can't understand why people are frightened of new ideas. I'm frightened of the old ones." And what I'm frightened of is the new ideas that people have about the old ideas. That they think, for instance, you know, we've talked about it before, that the altars of stone in the Old Testament were actually piles of rocks, and that the sacrifices usually included bringing a sheep there, cutting its throat, bleeding it out, setting it on top of the stones, and burning it up. In actuality, none of that is what they were talking about. It's what the Pharisees were doing at the time of Christ, but it's not what the Old Testament was talking about. Because, see, the Pharisees at the time of Christ had it wrong. They had it all mixed up. Now, there were religious groups at the time that knew that that was incorrect and spoke against it. But you're not allowed to hear about them. Because today, again, the same brutish nature of those ancient societies has taken over the minds of the people. And again, repentance is about changing that mind. Like Luther Burbank says, you need to change it, or at least rearrange your prejudices. Clive Bell once said, only reason can convince us of all three fundamental truths without a recognition of which there can be no effective liberty. That what we believe is not necessarily true, that what we like is not necessarily good, and that all questions are open. Most people won't accept all questions. They actually fear questioning what they've already come to believe. They fight against it. They war against it. And one of the things we talk about in the very first chapter, you know, like Patrick Henry asked on March 23rd, 1775, are we disposed to be of the number of those who, having eyes to see not, having ears hear not, the things which so clearly concern their temporal salvation? For my part, whatever anguish of spirit it may cost, I am willing to know the whole truth, to know the worst, and to provide for it. And of course, that was in his Patrick Henry speech before the Virginia Assembly, give me liberty, give me death. And we'll talk more about that when we come back, but most people don't know that Patrick Henry was opposed to the Constitution. And we'll tell you why he was opposed to the Constitution, and you can judge for yourself whether he was right or not. But mostly we want to talk about what is the alternative now for us. And is there an alternative? And can we pursue it? But we'll talk about that when we return to Keys to the Kingdom after this brief break.
My name is Mark and I'm from Melbourne in Australia, and I'm a minister in the church established by Jesus Christ more than 2,000 years ago. After reading the books published at hisholychurch.org, I realised that mainstream Christianity had taken a wrong turn by forgetting what Jesus said to do, to practice pure religion while remaining unspotted from the world. What does this mean and how is this done exactly? You'll find out when you go to hisholychurch.org and discover what it truly means to love God and your neighbour as much as yourself. Join the Living Network at hisholychurch.org.
Have you ever looked at the things happening in the world today and felt that something just wasn't right, but couldn't put your finger on it? Have you ever heard the phrase, God bless America, and wondered to yourself, does he really? Or have you ever looked at the government's policies on things such as abortion or same-sex marriage and asked yourself, how could they? Or where are all the Christians voicing their outrage? These are hard questions that many people today ask themselves. But along with those hard questions come some very hard answers. Answers that you may never heard before, but nonetheless will answer these and other questions you may have. So if you're looking for answers, join us at hisholychurch.org. It's not what you might think, and it will open the heart and mind to a whole other world that you never even knew existed. It did for me and many others. I know it will for you as well. So join us as we seek the kingdom of God and his righteousness at hisholychurch.org.
The Creator is the God of the living, not the God of the dead. His kingdom was, is, and will be forever on earth as it is in heaven. Start by connecting and finding other kingdom-seeking families on the His Holy Church Living Network. Visit www.hisholychurch.org to start your journey back to your unalienable birthright.
I'm Brother Justice, and I'm a minister of His Holy Church of Sacramento, California. His Holy Church is a powerful weapon in the hands of God. The books, The Covenants of the Gods, and Thy Kingdom Come has changed the course of my life forever. For those of you who are truly looking for the way, I encourage you to look to His Holy Church at www.hisholychurch.org. May the good Lord bless you and keep you.
Hi, I'm Brent. I'm a contact minister for the Living Network in Northeast Missouri. You're not the only one out there with the desire to learn the truth. There are people all over the world coming together in faith, hope, and charity. Join us at one of the upcoming gatherings to meet new people, fellowship, work, and play. Whether it's the Fall Burning Bush Festival in Oregon or the Spring Gathering in Northeast Missouri, you'll get all the details when you join the Living Network. Go to hisholychurch.org and click on the network link. Find out what you've been missing. You'll be glad you did.
Well, welcome back to Keys of the Kingdom. We were talking about the Constitution, and like we said at the beginning, that it's kind of a sacred cow. Everybody thinks that, you know, we're the greatest nation in the world and all that kind of stuff. But it's very clear that America's in a lot of trouble. The world is in a lot of trouble. And it's in trouble economically, morally, spiritually. Like the local sawmill down here has been trying to hire people for months now, and they can't get anybody to even pass the drug test, much less do the work. And it's a pretty laid-back mill, and I can't get anybody to do the work. But what's happening in America? What's happening to the work ethic of America? What's happening to the moral ethics in our society? What's happening around the world? And it's not a well-oiled machine anymore. It's working, it's functioning. But in almost every country, they're concerned about economic collapse. China's been concerned about it. Soviet Union's been concerned about it. Germany is extremely concerned about it. They keep working and they keep functioning. But we've seen a few bumps and grinds, but they're still talking about some serious, serious problems on the horizon. And of course, if we look back in history, all the great civilizations collapsed. And there was a particular pattern that we see in the history of those civilizations that brought about those collapses. And if you study history, not just study what men think about history, but the actual events themselves, you'll see that those same patterns are taking place today. And within the whole history of society, there are always groups that come out fairly well, even during the collapse of society. And they come out fairly well because they go another way. They do things differently. And some begin to do it at the last minute, actually in the decay of society. But then some will start doing it even before that so that society is somewhat prepared. Now, just as I said at the beginning of the show that AIDS, kills people in about 5 years or so, Ebola can kill people in 5 days, or sometimes in hours. And yet they're both attacking the body, the immune system of the body, in much the same way. They just do it very fast. And of course, Rome took about, from the first Caesar to the time where it finally collapsed was about 425 years. America is over 225 years old, or 220 some years old. And as a nation, if you actually go back to, back in the 1600s, and most people are unaware of this, but back in the 1600s, Cromwell sent troops to America to defend the American Republic. That's right. The American colonies were basically republics. Not because of what everybody was doing, but because of number of people were actually free from things public, because they actually owned their land, they owned their labor. They were still somewhat subjects of the British Empire, but they were also freemen because they owned their own land, and that was the definition of being a freeman, actually owning your own land. Nobody owns their own land in America anymore. They all have legal title. There's a lot more. They don't even own their labor. They don't own their children. They don't own any of these things. they're back in the bondage of Egypt. In Egypt, 20% of everything you earn had to go to the government, and they called it bondage. In America, far more goes to the government, and they call it freedom. That's, you know, just because you call it freedom doesn't make it freedom. No one is more hopelessly enslaved than those who believe that they are free. You're either free or not free by the circumstances, not because of the label on your underwear or your blue jeans or your name tag. You're free because you have the right to choose for yourself. You don't have the right to choose for yourself. Somebody else chooses for you. And we posted that preparing you the democracy cult, because if you go through the book, Contracts, Covenants, and Constitution, you'll see several sections on democracy and republics, and they point out very clearly that democracies, until around 1930, you'll find countless literature, including the Army Field Manual, that says that democracy was an evil form of government. It was bad. Nobody wanted to be in a democracy. Most of the founding fathers were against democracies. But now democracies are good. It was republics, and a republic was not merely an indirect democracy. And again, we explain all this in the book. Patrick Henry argued several places against the Constitution. And one of the chief things he argued against the Constitution was the fact that it began with the words, "We the people." And he asks, who authorized them to speak the language of "we the people" instead of "we the states"? This was from the debate itself. He said that right out. Why are you saying "we the people"? This really has nothing to do with the people. It was never put to a vote of the people. The people didn't sign it. They didn't send delegates to write it up. And like I said, they didn't even vote on it. So how did you subject all the people that were supposedly free people to the Constitution without them even voting on it? And had they voted on it, they would have voted it down. Historians agree to that. And even in the Pettiford case, which is not a federal case, but it's been quoted many times, no private person has a right to complain by suit in court on the grounds of breach of Constitution. The Constitution, it is true, is a compact, but he is not a party to it. The states are a party to it. And of course, it was the states who agreed to it. And they didn't actually even agree to it legally. They agreed to it illegally because, according to the Articles of Confederation, they had to have unanimous consent to change anything, and they did not have unanimous consent, and yet they treated it as if it had been ratified. That was a violation of a previous agreement. Remember, contract makes the law, and they had agreed not to change anything without unanimous consent, and they didn't get that at first. And they actually used the power that they did have, or assumed, to put pressure on members of the states to consent to it. And again, I should say member states to consent to it, because the people didn't ever get a chance to vote on it. In New Views of the Constitution of the United States, a man by the name of John Taylor of Carolina stated, hence the attempt of the Constitution to establish a federal government without these natural souls was preposterous, unnatural, and void. And so what is he talking about? The natural souls. That's the people. They were simply taking the power, the limited power that was in the states, and creating this third body outside of all the states that was called this federal government. And we go through it kind of step by step, and we're not going to go through it all here. We quote Lansing versus Smith. People of the states are entitled to all the rights which formerly belonged to the king by his prerogative. So how in the world are they giving up rights to men who they gave no power to take their rights away from them? How the enumeration of rights in the Bill of Rights was another thing that was argued against, because they feared that it was somehow people would think that their rights came from the Constitution, and they didn't. their rights pre-existed. Their rights were endowed by God. And we just have this strange perspective. And those of you who've studied all the history books that I've studied, high school history books, grade school history books, from about 1920 to, I pretty much stopped reading them around 1990. And you see this progression of this view of history. It's just astounding. The people who had just won American freedom were vastly opposed to the Constitution, so much so it is guaranteed by the historians that it would have been voted down, yet somehow or other we think that it is the source of our salvation. It is not. It is there. I don't want it to go away. But I want you to stop looking to it for your salvation and start looking to the way of Christ for your salvation, which means that you have to gather together to become the social welfare of society. I pointed out in just the last show that I was reading 1901 documents of the Communist Party saying that they had to stop and do away with homeschooling in America. It's 1901. And of course, you know how they did it? They promoted public schools. Because most kids were not educated in public schools before 1910. They were educated in the home, and even then, most of the public schools were heavily funded by private funds. And so therefore, there was a lot of private control of those schools. Today, there really is nothing but, you know, top-down control. And you don't have the control over what is being taught, and most of you don't even know what's being taught, because I don't know anybody who's read and seen, well, actually, there are some people speaking out about it, have read and seen the changes in the history books. And you can see it's an actual organized change. So what is actually going on in those history books? What are they telling your children? What did they tell you? Yeah, everybody should go to newsofviews.com and look up Brother Gregory Williams and read our latest articles on Schools to Fool. And we have another one coming out. Probably a fourth one will come out even after that because of new information, because it was so well accepted. There was a lot of people writing me and sending me more information, and I've been putting that together so that we can put together one more article on the subject. And I just listened to a lord in England who was saying that, you know, basically the public school system is a failure. It's a bad idea. It's destroying our youth. Now, a lot of people don't want to believe that because they don't want to teach their kids at home. Everybody should be trying to figure out a way to teach their kids at home and finding out how to do it and gathering together with other people who will facilitate that process. And you should be doing it in order to save your children. James Madison said, "I believe there are more instances of the abridgment of the freedom of the people by gradual and silent encroachment of those powers than by violent and sudden usurpation." What powers are those? The rights to choose. The right to choose what some of you saw that father who was complaining about a book that there was required reading for his 14-year-old. That was virtually pornography, and he complained about it, and they had him arrested. The book was about bullying in schools, and he complained about it, went like, you know, 60 seconds or maybe 120 seconds over his allotted time. He wasn't yelling or screaming or anything. He was speaking out that he was outraged, and they were interrupting him, and so he ended up going over his allotted time. They had him arrested and taken away in handcuffs. Because he was complaining about a book that was being used in school, and they said the book was there to teach kids about bullying. I don't know about you, but I think having a cop come in and arrest a parent because he went 2 minutes over the allotted time and having him taken to jail, I mean, this man's an attorney, taken to jail. He wasn't beating up anybody. He was complaining about requiring his 14-year-old daughter to read pornography that could not even be read on air because it's not allowed to say these kinds of things on TV. And TV is really lax compared to what it was 20, 30 years ago. So you talk about bullying. They say, oh, we're trying to teach the kids about bullying, and they're bullying the parents. And you guys stand around and think, well, I'll send my kids to that school. You shouldn't be doing it. And I haven't even got on the fact that you're coveting your neighbor's goods by sending your kids to that school, because you're making your neighbor pay for your child's education. That should get every Christian out of public school. And I'm just astounded that ministers don't see that. But here, let me read this one thing here to you that's a quote from probably James Truslow. Yeah, History of the United States by James Truslow Adams. Looks like Volume 1. He says, just as the revolutionary Adams opposed... Let me see here. Am I actually reading out of that book? Yeah, I am. Okay, I guess I am. Just as the revolutionary Adams opposed the Constitution in Massachusetts, so did Patrick Henry in Virginia. So Adams opposed the Constitution. Patrick Henry opposed the Constitution. He says, he who is in Stamp Act days had proclaimed that there should be no Virginians and no New Yorkers, but only Americans, now declaimed as violently against the preamble of the Constitution because it began "We the people of the United States" instead of "We the states." Like many, he feared a consolidated government and a loss of state rights. Not only Henry, but much abler men such as Mason, Benjamin, Harrison, Monroe, R.H. Lee were also opposed and debated. Others in what was the most acute discussion carried on anywhere. Goes on to say, owing to the way in which the conventions were held, the great opposition manifested everywhere, and the management required to secure the barest majority for ratification, it seems impossible to avoid the conclusion that the greater part of the people were opposed to the Constitution. The greater part of the people were opposed to the Constitution. It was not submitted to the people directly, and in those days of general limited suffrage, even those who vote for delegates to the states' conventions were mostly of the propertied class, although the amount of property called for may have been slight, which is why they eventually took the provision out that you had to be a property owner. When they were talking about property owners again, they're talking about people who had lawful title to their property, not people who had settled for legal title, but people who actually own the beneficial interest of their property. You don't do that anymore. You've lost all that. By exactly what Madison feared, is the gradual encroachment, the gradual shifting of the way in which people were thinking and understanding. And it was gradual to some degree, but it's actually been on the fast track since you have gone to the government for your education, to the point where you don't even know your own history, much less your children coming up in the schools today. You can't even find good history books hardly anymore. Some are better than others, but the best history book I ever read was written in 1800s. Way thicker than what you see normally for history books, but far, far better history. Far more accurate, far more detailed, far more clean in its perspective of the human mission on this earth, and what was the driving force in people like those who settled America. In 1787, when the Constitution was ready to be submitted to the governors of the states for ratification, Patrick Henry lectured against it in the Virginia State House for 3 weeks, criticizing the Constitution, warning that it had been written as if good men will take office. He asked, what would we do when evil men took office? He went on to say, when evil men take office, the whole gang will be in collusion, and he declared, and they will keep the people in utter ignorance and steal their liberties by ambuscade. And that's exactly what's happened. Now, why is the church talking about this? Because liberty is given to men by God. The right to choose is something that has been granted to you by God. It's not granted to you by government. Governments, today, most governments are in the business of taking liberty away. There's only one government, only one form of government that's in the business of restoring the liberty to the people. And like the church in the wilderness, it's the church established by Jesus Christ. Because the true church established by Jesus Christ is filled with ministers who want to take care of the needy of society so that no one has to turn to the men who call themselves benefactors but exercise authority. They can only do this with your support. And that support comes in the form of the fact that you must teach your children at home. You must work to become self-sufficient in your health. What you're eating, what you're consuming, where you're going for your assistance. We just had somebody who was, I won't tell you what the problem was because then you might identify the person, but they had over $100,000 worth of doctor bills. And through our network and the information that we're sharing with each other on the Living Network, they moved their $100,000 bill down to $18,000 simply by negotiating. And they haven't even brought in the professional negotiators who offered their services for free. And the fact is every minister of his church congregation needs to be trained up in such negotiations so that they can protect the assets of the family, because we want to see the families prosper. But besides that, we want to find remedies that will heal the sick and bring life where there is death, and bring prosperity where there is loss. Because our garden is the people. The people's garden is the land. And people need to work together, caring about the weightier matters of law, judgment, or mercy and faith, to bring about a free society. And this is why Christ says that you needed to attend to the weightier matters and call men hypocrites because they weren't doing it. You have to do this by taking care of one another. And that is the role of the church. So I encourage everybody, to go to our websites, preparingyou.com or thelivingnetwork.org or hisholychurch.org. Find the network links and join the local network, which is, you know, based on your geographical area. Get to know people in that area, form congregations of record, and start learning what Americans knew back then, Americans who opposed the Constitution. We're not opposing it now. We know you need it now because the people are incapable of liberty. They couldn't survive freedom. If you set the people free today, it would be total chaos. You need that government to hold the people in line. But those of you who have the character of Christ, who want to come together and begin to learn the skill of a free society, need to do so. And the skills of the free society include giving and forgiving, seeking and searching in your hearts as well as amongst your neighbors for solutions. And those solutions are there. You'd be surprised. They're almost invisible to you now because of your upbringing. But if you repent and turn around and seek the kingdom of God and His righteousness, everything will be provided unto you, including a cure for Ebola and any other disease they come up with. But until then, may peace be upon your house, and may God be with you. God bless.
You have been listening to The Keys of the Kingdom with Brother Gregory of His Holy Church. For more information on the educational ministry provided by His Holy Church and Brother Gregory, including services, counseling, lectures, books, and other audio materials, please write to His Church at Summer Lake, Box 10, Summer Lake, Oregon, 97640. You can also find us on the web at www.hisholychurch.net.